press comes to us for comment on stuff. I think if you could become a voice for something, you do get a lot of free media. That would be one tactic I would suggest. The other, of course, is to get sued. That raises your profile quite a lot.
If you run a business and are looking for space, we're talking two of you needing a couple of desks to hundreds of you needing a stunning new office. You need to check out Hubble HQ. They have a beautiful, easy-to-use website where you can find just what you're looking for. And you can book and manage your office viewings through the click of a button. You'll also get a dedicated expert advisor who can help you make the right decision and negotiate the best deal for you. Best thing? These guys won't bore you with jargon. They'll just sort you out. And I should know, I'm a happy customer. Whether your thing is stunning views or fridges full of free booze, you'll find it on Hubble HQ. So go to hubblehq.com/secretleaders to find your perfect office today. Described as one of the world's most influential women and CEOs, Justine Roberts is at the helm of one of the world's most talked about forums, Mumsnet. Loved by many and the cause of many heated discussions, Justine has created a place for open and frank conversation for a wide sector of the public. As a wife and mother of four, including twins, Justine has the exact experience of how hard it is to be a mum, a working mum, and many people would thank her for their own sanity. Recognised for her impact on the economy and ultimately being awarded a CBE in 2017, the Oxford-educated ex-journalist takes time from her busy schedule, probably having to run here in trainers. Sort of, converses.
Yeah,
similar. To discuss all things Mumsnet, Grandsnet, and probably Liverpool FC Net. Right, Justine, welcome. And thank you for taking time.
Thank you.
Pleasure. Okay, so especially making time for me, given I'm not a parent, unless you include pets, which you probably don't.
Oh, definitely. I mean, my two Patterdale Terriers are more trouble than all the kids put together. So I sympathise.
Yeah, have you got any pets net on the horizon?
We have some very active forums on all types of pet ownership. So we have the dog house for dog owners. We have chicken keepers for the chicken people.
And the tack room for horses. Else.
Yeah, the cats are just busy everywhere, aren't they? You know, there's no controlling the cats.
Exactly. They're just doing what they want to do.
Yeah.
So we always start off with our guests with a quick fire round just to learn some quick facts about you. So summer or winter?
Spring.
Okay. Blog or vlog?
Definitely blog.
Okay, and iPhone or Android?
Android.
Good, me too. The only person that's ever said that pretty much, though.
Yeah.
Tube or taxi?
Both, depending. But tube is good, though, because you get your steps in.
True. Well, walking's better then, in that case. If that's your motivation.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of walking on the tube. But yes, it depends on the weather and, and the time of day.
All right, well, it's England, so we'll say tube.
Okay, tube.
No, I was mostly not telling you, it was because of the weather part. But, right, Liverpool FC or England?
A silly question. That's the Reds every time.
True patriot through and through. netball or football?
Football.
Favourite tipple?
Coffee. Gin.
Okay.
I could go on.
A new drink.
Yeah.
Gin with coffee.
Depends, day or night.
Good. Right, hopefully that's made you ready for the big question. So let's just talk career. So you started off as a journalist, then you went for a well-publicised epic failure of a holiday, which started the birth of Mumsnet. Can you tell us a little bit about that holiday and how it started?
Yes, so it was my first holiday as a parent, and I had my nearly one-year-old twins in tow. I had all the paraphernalia for them and a teeny little bit of hand luggage for us. And we picked everything wrong. We picked the wrong destination, the wrong resort, the wrong time zone, quite frankly, the wrong children. And it was an unmitigated disaster from start to finish. But it was also for most of the other parents who chose that particular venue. So the very simple light bulb idea was, wouldn't it have been good to find out before we left? And it's not just holiday destinations, is it? It's all that stuff that as parents you are clueless about and no one trained you for, and it's really quite an important job, possibly the most important job you will ever do. So it would be good to connect. And just then there was this thing called the internet that presented the opportunity to connect to all kinds of people all over the place. So that seemed like a good vehicle for this startup idea.
Oh, for this very fledgling idea that turned into an empire. So how did your partnership with Carrie Longton come about? And can you explain who she is?
Yes, so I met Carrie at antenatal class. So we had a regular Monday group along with our antenatal group, and I persuaded her to join me in this venture. She was reluctant, I think. She'd been a TV producer, reluctant to go back to work, reluctant to do this because she hadn't even... She didn't have a laptop. She didn't really know what the internet was. And reluctant to work too full-time. So I promised her, I sort of lied through my teeth. I said we could have every meeting in the jacuzzi at the local gym. It was all about lifestyle and work-life balance. We did try a meeting in the jacuzzi at the local gym, but the papers got very soggy, so we couldn't carry on with that.
And wasn't a good place to teach her how to use a laptop either, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, she did do the kind of flexible working thing, and that is something that we've continued with Mumsnet as a principle, that we try and make work around the people who work here.
And do you remember what your original pitch was?
Let's give it a go. It might be fun and you don't have to work too hard.
I meant to investors. That would be an amazing pitch investors.
To investors.
You don't have to work hard.
Well, you know, these were back in the days of the gold rush of the internet. So it was, you know, we are going to be enormous, scale up quick. It's all about land grab. We're going to have more visitors and more e-commerce sales than it's possible to imagine because we're going to be the first mover. As it turned out, none of that was right.
Some of it.
Well, I think
you're maybe
certainly
being
not
yourself.
The sales and certainly not the money-raising bit. We didn't manage any of that because the dot-com bubble burst and everything went quiet for some time.
Can you take us through that story? Because I've read about this and it's fascinating, and especially, you know, these ebbs and flows that entrepreneurs go through. You're either in the right time or the wrong time or just about one or the other.
Yes.
So how did you go about securing investment or the whole process, so
well,
to speak?
Well, we went about it in the way that everyone was going about it, which is I wrote a business plan that was literally sticking my finger in the air and guessing some stuff, but making everything sound very big, very global, that we were going to burn through lots of cash, that we needed lots of cash. And I got quite close to raising £4.5 million, which is what I was asking for. Fortunately, I didn't. I mean, I had some interesting conversations along the way. Once someone said, I'll give you the money, but I want someone else to run it, which then that someone else actually was a childless man, which made me laugh, for a site called Mumsnet. And then someone else said, I can't give you any money, but when you fail, you can come and work for me. And then luckily, the dot-com bubble burst before there was any more humiliation and no one was raising any more money. And it turned out to be very lucky because all our projections were wrong. There was no e-commerce. People were on dial-up. It took, you know, 15 minutes to kind of log on. So the idea that we were going to make a fortune of e-commerce at that point was just madness. And we would have just raised lots of money, had a shiny office in Clerkenwell, taken on loads of people and then had to fire them all. So I'm actually incredibly relieved that we didn't. And we were afforded some time to grow this community by word of mouth, organically, slowly from the back bedroom of my house. That gave us time really to do it properly.
And you never took any money?
Never took any money, no. Well, actually, I say that. One of my good friends put a few grand in. And we didn't even spend it all in the first 3 years, yeah. So she's done well.
Okay, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Very nice. So you're still friends?
We're still good friends, yeah.
And you might not have been with your VC investors on
Well, I think I would have lost them a lot of money and it would have been a very painful exercise. So,
do you have any regrets about that experience? I mean, obviously looking back now on how well it's gone, it might be hard to, but, you know, if you just succeeded in executing some of those things, do you think it would have been different and quite an interesting journey, or has it turned out how you'd hoped?
I don't have regrets about it in the sense that I think, as I say, we were lucky timing-wise, I think. Unless you got in and out at that stage, most people went bust. A lot of highly funded competitors went bust and burnt a lot of cash on the way, spoiled a lot of lives, probably. So I don't have any regrets about that. And in any case, I think all mistakes are learnings. I'm pleased that I don't have a bunch of people who care about the bottom line at all costs. That's allowed us to do something slightly different with Mumsnet, to really focus on user needs. So in all ways, I'm actually thankful for my inability to have raised cash. I think it's allowed us to do something quite different.
I think with very, very few extremely obvious exceptions,
building communities at scale really quickly is virtually impossible because you just don't know what people want until you've really experienced it slowly
yes.
and honestly.
And because it's all about authenticity, right? So the idea that you can sort of fake enthusiasm, fake users, and yes, as you rightly say, you need to follow what the crowd is telling you, not to try and dictate. So yeah, it's all about listening and then adapting.
Do you remember who your first hires were and how you chose who they were, why they needed to be on the team and such things?
Yeah. Well, initially we were just begging and borrowing favours. So a lot of friends with various skills were called into action, whether it was legal staff. In fact, the guy who wrote the code for us was one of my best friends who fortunately had he'd studied the same thing as me at university, but he'd done a coding course in his spare time. So he wrote the code and developed Mumsnet. And our first proper hire really wasn't till about 2007 when we actually, so that was 7 years after we started. Everyone else was sort of a mate doing us a favour. Some people were paid bits and bobs, but it was only in 2007 we actually hired an editor, a proper editor, and paid them a proper salary. They came from the BBC, actually.
Okay.
Yeah.
So how did you decide? You must have had advisors, or can you just describe this team to us? Or was it just you? Basically, what I'm trying to do is understand the picture of the first 7 years. We've just walked into your very lovely, creative-looking office. It's full of people and different cavernous entrances and exits into different rooms as well. So I feel like we're maybe halfway through the maze. But the reality is, you know, the picture you're painting is might be you in your bedroom for 7 years with people coming in and out to do various different favours here and there. But
yeah.
What was it really
no,
like?
Everyone was working from home and we would occasionally meet round dining room tables. But there weren't many people. I mean, it was incredibly bootstrapped. It was, you know, we really didn't draw a salary for a good 5 years. People were working just the few hours they could manage. It was incredibly so. I mean, I don't know if you remember back then, but the bottom fell out and no one believed in it. Mm. Luckily, we grew community and they sent us checks sometimes, literally, in the post to keep it going.
Like the Jimmy Wales of mums.
Yeah, but there was no... it was kind of like NPR. Every now and then I would write a sort of mail saying, you know, doing my fundraising bit and saying, you know, for $2.99 a month, it's the cost of a Starbucks, blah, blah, blah. There was no commercial interest at all. There was no commercial interest even in the internet was hard, but the idea of the social web really hadn't happened. If you think Facebook didn't start till 2004, it didn't come to the UK really till 2005, and Twitter started in 2006. So everyone was scared stiff. Advertisers were scared stiff of real people discussing their brands. That wasn't something they were going to pay for. Mm. So it wasn't until about 2006, 2007, everyone started going mad about Web 2.0. And then suddenly we thought, okay, there's some revenue, which means we can hire someone and get an office and stuff like that.
Did it follow that typical surprisingly un-VC funded but hockey stick graph where it's all quiet for the first 6-7 years and then suddenly it's one big line up?
Yes, it was. It's when Americans look at the graph of our user growth, they always say, oh my God, you've gone exponential, which is a good thing, I'm pleased to say. So yeah, it was exactly like that. And it was a concurrence of a number of things. One was people started believing the business model, the social web became a thing, but we also got sued memorably. So our profile was raised quite a lot, and then David Cameron came on and did a web chat. So for all kinds of reasons, we had a very quiet start and then a very accelerated growth period from about 2006 onwards.
And what happened with the lawsuit? What specifics? Is that something you're allowed to talk about?
I'm not allowed to talk about some of the outcomes of it.
Can
the
you
settlement.
Give us a generic anecdote?
Yeah, well, so yes, yeah, so we were sued by Gina Ford, who was the best-selling author of parenting books, the biggest selling author of parenting books in the UK. She wrote a book telling you how to, you know, look after your newborn baby, and it was called Contented Little Baby. And she was a polarizing figure. She has kind of quite a regimented procedural method of looking after babies. Some people love it, some people hate it. That played out on Mumsnet. It was really a sort of early stage misunderstanding that the web is not like a newspaper. It's not a, you know, we weren't choosing and commissioning and editing and vetting what people were saying. It was a free conversation. So she tried to shut us down, literally. She threatened our server host and all kinds of things, because she didn't really get the fact that this was a discussion, not a publication. And, you know, the libel laws took a while to catch up with the internet, and we worked very hard after this incident to lobby for a change in the libel laws, which now reflect a bit more about the fact that it's individual people speaking, not a publication speaking.
For you personally, you've been working on something for so long, hustling away, not on your own, obviously, because you had a community of supporters by that
point. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But what kind of mental toll did that take on you at the time?
In a way, it felt like a labour of love, not a business at that stage, but it was incredibly rewarding because of the users and the community. So, I mean, very soon people would write to us and say, Mumsnet's literally saved my life for various reasons. Either, you know, they were postnatally depressed, or they had a child who was very ill, or they were in a domestic violence situation, and the community was supporting them through that. So it had a purpose. You know, I certainly had doubts about whether it was ever going to be financially viable, but it definitely felt rewarding.
Yeah, you were fulfilled.
Yeah.
But to get sued at that point, that's...
To get sued for was both scary, but also, again, felt the community was amazing and very, very funny. I mean, it's a very common reaction on Mumsnet to sort of greet adversity with humour. I think that's a parental thing, quite frankly. It's all you've got, really, at certain grim times, is a bit of a sense of humour about it. So it was being in that media storm when we led, I remember being the first item on Channel 4 News. That was weird and odd and difficult and completely time-consuming. And then the legal case went on for some time, and I became a very boring person. You know, I would accost people, you know, friends of mine, and just bang on about the lawsuit. It's a bit like when people get divorced, they really can't talk about anything else. And if anything, that was what made us settle, was this, you know, it was just taking all the focus, all the energy. But it was also, we were at the vanguard of freedom of speech on the web. So we had a lot of people supporting us, a lot of free legal advice and stuff like that. You know, it wasn't as grim as it sounds. It was very intense, but not as grim as it sounds.
It sounds like it was kind of a pivotal point. You know, it was intended as a negative and turned out to be a positive.
Yes, I know. It's my advice to all fledgling websites: get sued.
Yeah, sounds like a great publicity
that
opportunity.
That is quite flippant, but there was a, I mean, clearly.
I guess we know what we'll be using in the trailer soundbite.
Yeah, yeah.
How do some of the world's sharpest minds start their day? By putting their brain first. And it's not just our secret leaders who kick off every day with heights. From Stephen Fry to best-selling author and fellow podcaster Dr. Rangan Chatterjee, who give us rave reviews. So if you care about your brain's health and cognitive potential, think heights. Listeners can get 25% off their first month with the code LEADERSHEIGHTS at www.yourheights.com.
So I just want to talk to you about how you personally developed as well, because you went from, I guess, one of the most unique skills is to be a leader in a distributed environment, especially at the vanguard of that, because that's obviously not what the norm was at the time, having distributed workforces. And the internet is the thing that made that possible, and you were at the forefront of that. But now you're surrounded by people every single day. Did you have to make a massive shift in how you behave as a leader? Did you get mentoring, coaching, read all the books? Did it just happen very naturally because you're just born that way?
No, I definitely have had to evolve and work on myself. And I think, you know, it's partly about the size of the organisation. When you're under 50, it's very easy for people to understand, you know, what the values are, because they can witness it, really. But once you get beyond that, you have to work very hard at communicating. And that didn't come naturally. I had to go and learn it. I had to go and understand that actually saying nothing was saying something, and that you are, you know, sort of a role model at all stages. And I now devote quite a lot of my time to internal communication. I've always devoted a lot of my time to external communication, but the internal bit is something you have to actually devote time to. And I think it's a key part of the job of a CEO. And, you know, the role evolves away from when you're a startup CEO, you've sort of got a finger in every pie and you're doing everything and you're the energy, and you have to train yourself not to be that interfering person and to actively go and hire people who are better than you at doing some of those specialist jobs. So, yeah, no, I had to read a lot of books and reprogram myself. And I had to have quite a hard conversation with myself about whether this is my natural skill set. And if it's not, can I learn something new? Because it wasn't my natural state of affairs. I don't think it is for many founders, actually. But the question is, are you able to go and learn and retrain yourself? And, you know, it's a work in progress.
What do you think your own colleagues would say about you if we asked them and you weren't listening? What, you know, what's Justine like as a CEO? What do you think they say and what would you hope they say?
Oh, God, that is a really hard question.
Yeah, but you being your biggest critic, which is part of your self-development learning journey.
Yeah, so, no, absolutely.
And then we'll catch it on audio.
Yeah, thanks, guys. I mean, I hope they say that I lead from the front in the sense of I take responsibility and ownership of stuff and that I'm brave. And I hope that they would also say that I'm collaborative. I mean, we've defined our values here. They do reflect how I would like to be as a leader. So being straightforward and honest, being pragmatic and flexible, being brave and fearless are values that we have. I wouldn't have them if I didn't think I could reflect them.
And well, those are the things that Mumsnet's very famous for.
Yeah, yeah, and being collaborative is the other. So, you know, that's what I hope they'd say. What else would they say? They'd probably say that you should never, ever play any competitive sport with me. And people actually sort of run away when I suggest a game of rounders and things like that. So there's a bit of history there.
Okay, so no company sports days. Or
well, we
are,
do have
just,
them.
Yeah, but it's... there's just a tumbleweed going across because no one's turned up.
Yes, they come along and I have to curtail my competitive instincts.
Okay. Is it just the let Justine win day?
Yeah, okay. I think probably that's what it comes down to.
What have been the biggest challenges for you in oil? So you've mentioned, obviously, getting sued being one, but it turned out to be a huge opportunity. Doesn't sound like that was the hardest moment at Mumsnet. What was the hardest moment that you have on record about your journey so far?
I think the hardest period of time was when we were under pretty persistent attack in terms of being hacked and swatted and all that stuff. So there were about, it was about a 3-week period where we suffered DDoS attacks and phishing attempts. And then I and a couple of users had their house swatted, which is, I was officially the first person ever in the UK to be swatted, which is my claim to fame, which is what that means is a SWAT team is sent round to your house in the middle of the night. In fact, in my case, I think they said there'd been a murder of a child. And so, you know, armed police turn up and dogs and the whole lot. And, you know, it's...
To protect you whilst terrifying you.
Well, to try and stop an incident, you know. And it's ended very badly. It's much bigger in America, where it started in the gaming community, and people have been known to be shot because, you know, they're moving about in their house and the police mistake it for the intruder. And so it's pretty scary stuff. And that went hand in hand with the site being under daily attack, our servers being flooded, and a hacking attempt too. So that was pretty bad. And it was a great strain on the team here because we had to work all hours, both to keep the community informed and to try and get them as safe as possible. So that felt quite lonely, actually. We also had a bomb threat here, actually, I remember. That was the most intense, tough period.
It's pretty intense, yeah. And tough by most people's standards, by
yeah.
the way.
But again, you know, there were upsides. By that time, we were about 100 people, and the team rallied immensely. Everyone went out of their way, came in at all hours to sort the problem, and that was really heartening. But in terms of just being draining, and I remember not being able to sleep, and that's kind of a bad thing, right? Because I kept waking up thinking, you know, we were going to... There were masked men coming to attack us, so, you know, that was a slightly obvious manifestation of my concern.
Well, how did you get out of that period? Because obviously, you know, with something like that, there's no sort of finality to it. Once you've been exposed to the terror that could be a thing, like how do you find yourself getting comfortable again, or does it just pass with time?
Well, I mean, we got better security in site security. So we paid for a very expensive firewall, we closed the gap that allowed the phishing. So there are a set of, like anything, you know, you have your immediate response and then you have what can you learn and how can you be better. So, I mean, you know, in some ways, we made the site safer. No site is ever safe, but we're much safer than we were, and we're much more professional about it than we were. So, you know, I do firmly believe that everything comes with a learning, and that was our learning.
That was your firewall learning.
Yeah. Okay. We also learnt some lessons on communication. I think we did pretty well about, you know, again, our values came to the core. We care, you know, more about keeping our users safe than keeping things quiet. So we were transparent, we were open. Every time you go through one of these instances, you learn how to do it better.
Sorry to interrupt, but I just wanted to tell you guys about the team I use for hiring tech talent, the amazing Lefos Associates. They're specialists at finding the best people in technology, digital, and change management, and they have an incredible program that takes leadership teams through pre- and post-funding recruitment and scaling headaches. I know you know what I'm talking about. So if you're looking to scale a tech team, you need LAFOSSE.com. Now back to today's secret leader.
So you're an advocate for many good causes via Mumsnet. What are the current causes you're most involved with at the moment?
So we have a campaign around postnatal care, trying to get postnatal care more consistently better across the country. We're about actually to do something on baby wipes. Have you ever used baby wipes? You may not have.
Yeah.
Well, because they are amazing whether you've got a baby or not for cleaning stuff, but they absolutely cause havoc if they get flushed down the loo.
Yeah, it's biodegradable ones now, I saw.
Yeah. So
very popular.
Yeah, well, biodegradable are really helpful, but they still mess up the plumbing system and cause problems for the water company. So we're going to get involved in that, to just simple messaging to stop people doing that. And what other causes are we interested in? I mean, we tend to reflect what the conversation that's going on Mumsnet. So we've got an ongoing mission to get, I don't know if you've heard of a company called Bounty, but they basically collect data in postnatal wards. So they literally come and quiz you after you've just given birth and get your data. And it's really intrusive.
They sell subscription products to you. Is that the one?
Yeah. Well, there's a couple of models. But yes, and that's really intrusive. And we don't understand why the NHS let that happen. So we're trying to kick them out of the labour wards, yeah. So there are lots of things, but you never know. We don't sit there and say, what are our campaigns going to be for the next 12 months? We see what comes out of our forums.
Talking about, I was just about to ask a different question, and then I remembered your comment on how the community responds with humour and laughter a lot.
Yeah.
Are there some great examples that spring to mind, or, you know, that are just some of the funniest moments from Mumsnet that you can just remember?
I mean, some of them are quite, my favourite moments are all the really nuanced threads, which it never really don't come across in a nutshell. But I'll give you an example around the Gina Ford suing thing. Was she was at the time, obviously Harry Potter was quite big. We had to ask our users not to mention her name. So I gave the analogy that was a bit like not being able to discuss Manchester United on a football forum, but we felt there was no other option because we were just getting so many legal letters every time she was mentioned. Sorry?
I can see where it's going.
Yeah.
She who might not be named?
Exactly, she who must know. So immediately our users responded with an acronym, which is very Mumsnet territory anyway, of she who must not be named. I can't say the letters without getting it wrong, but and it was just so brilliant and so straight away, and actually they couldn't really pin it down after that, so the lawyers, so it did the job as well. So they were able to be supportive without getting us into legal trouble.
That kind of response seems a little bit like, it's almost like you're a parallel universe to Reddit, where it's exactly the same kind of behaviour, exactly the same type of community, but just a completely different type of person.
You know, Reddit and Mumsnet have very similar traits. The difference is I think we moderate much more actively. We have a set of values that we moderate to. If you walk in here, the first thing you see is a sign saying we want to make parents' lives easier. And in the end, we do try and keep it civil, because in the end, we think everyone screaming at each other doesn't make anyone's lives easier.
Yeah, and I guess if there's no boundaries, it can really go anywhere.
Exactly.
Okay, enough business chat. I want to just get to know Justine Roberts for a brief moment, if we may. So wife, mother, Liverpool fan, we've covered that stuff. But how do you manage a work-life balance? Is there such a thing?
I don't think I would say that they are disconnected enough to say they are imbalanced. So I think increasingly, particularly with this thing called a smartphone in your hand, it's impossible to separate the two. So I think you actually have to work really actively, very hard at carving out space from work. And you almost have to book it in your diary. It's quite interesting. You have to book in time off, because otherwise it's almost impossible. So that's what I do. I wouldn't say it was balanced, but I try and carve out time for the things that are really important to keep me sane and to keep my family happy.
What does a typical day look like for you? Because by just listening to that, it sounds almost like you've got quite a good routine now. Is that nonsense? Is that just it was a guess, so it could be.
I mean, the thing, what you see, what the smartphone has allowed you to do is to be always on. Which is good, right? Because you're always productive. I don't walk anywhere without listening to a podcast. I don't sit anywhere without checking my email. It's incredibly productive and you can work much more flexibly and all that kind of stuff. But the problem is, it means you're always on. And in the end, I think that's not great for you in terms of recharging, and it's certainly not great for your family and the people you care about, because you can always be distracted. So I'm sort of always on, but I actively carve out periods when I'm off. And that's kind of the way I deal with it.
What do you do to unwind? Do you meditate? Do you do anything like that?
I try and do yoga, but I find it quite hard to make myself do that. So actually, we have a yoga class on Thursday lunchtimes here, because then it feels like it's sort of regimented and part of my job. But no, what do? I watch football. I do a lot of that.
Very meditative, watching Premier League football, as everyone knows.
It's definitely distracting though, right? And I do holidays where it's quite hard. Often there's quite a lot of danger, so you can't really think about other things.
You must have so many sarcastic comments going to you before you pick any destination.
Yeah.
Where's your favourite place to holiday now? Not the same place that started it.
I quite like swimming in the estuary near where my parents live. That I like going there because it's there's no scene there. It's very just peaceful. So that's nature. That's my bit of nature. But I really like skiing. You can't really think about much else when you're trying to get down a mountain and stay alive. And sailing is the other one. So those are things I like doing.
Okay, so some semi-extremes there as well.
Yeah, so a bit of near-death experience.
Yeah, nothing like that for a bit of clarity. I mean, look, managing all the stuff, between your personal life, your private life, these kind of attacks, etc., quite a superpower, might say. Not the kind of thing that everyone can just handle. I would imagine there's been some people along the way that you've looked up to or that might have helped you through some of those experiences. So who are your mentors, or even if not, people that you look up to, like great authors, philosophers, anything like that, or...?
So at this point, I have to mention my husband, who is incredibly supportive. And if he wasn't doing the job he did, he would do very well in crisis comms.
I genuinely thought when I asked that question, you were going to say something like Ian Rush.
No, I mean, I'm coming there. I'm getting there.
Yeah, okay.
I have to, but he is my confidant, my friend, so he's very supportive. And quite frankly, he had to be, right? Because Mumsnet was a labour of love for the first 6 years. So, and he was always very enthusiastic about it. So that he deserves a huge, thank you from me, really. In terms of inspirational role models, so from the past, Bill Shankly would definitely, I mean that not flippantly. I think what he did at Liverpool involving, it was for the people. He really understood that the crowd and the people who paid the money to come were as important as the owners of the club and the team and all the rest of it. And he understood that. And I'm pleased to say Jurgen Klopp has come in back and reignited that tradition as well. So that's why he's doing so well. But I've read a lot about Bill Shankly, and I actually think he is a great democratic socialist. And I really enjoyed he was an early engager with the people, put it like that. In terms of role models, I'm on a board of an insurance company that is in the FTSE 100 now and is only 20 years old. And the way that the founders have grown that business and kept it real, and their philosophy about equality, about communication, and about looking after their staff is inspirational. A couple of men called David and Henry who run Admiral Insurance, I'd give them a shout out. For me, it's not about stars and celebs, it is about the users of Mumsnet, who from very early on have been incredibly supportive and, as I say, funny, full of humour, and really show that there is such a thing of people going out of their way to be communal and kind to each other. So the way they support each other, again, they're completely anonymous, largely, through very difficult life situations, gave life to Mumsnet, really. It's the everyday acts of kindness that really blow me away.
What is the best piece of advice you've ever been given?
Okay, so this is a bit rude.
So we've got a parental guidance. It's fine, don't worry.
Feel free to cut this out. But no, I think as, particularly in this sort of social media environment, as a woman speaking up, it can be quite scary. And going on things like Question Time and putting yourself out there can feel, you know, you can often have that inner voice saying, you don't deserve to be there, you know, you're a fraud, you're, you know, all those sort of trolls on Twitter come flooding at you and you think you can easily get very cowed. So a friend of mine once told me, before you do anything, just think, fuck them, I'm going to prove them wrong. So that's kind of what I do. I stand there and say, fuck it, fuck them, I'm going to do this anyway.
It's been working so far.
And I recently also learnt that you should put the pressure on the right ball of your feet before you do any kind of public speaking, because it connects with the left side, the analytical memory side of your brain.
So there's one. A specific foot?
I'll do it right now and they'll probably suddenly become very clear. So just under your big toe, on your right foot, that you should lean on that when you're doing anything. You know, if you're being asked to think publicly, that's what you should do.
That's great advice. I mean, that might be the best advice we've had on here. Full stop. Always the best advice. I can trust you for that from now on. Thank you very much, Justine.
Cheers.
Next week on Secret Leaders.
I'd been encouraged by a professor who said, look, I don't think this is a good business, but you should throw this out on Kickstarter so it can fail. I came back to London, threw it online, and it sold out in 4 days. I remember on the one hand being excited and on the other hand being incredibly nervous. You know, you now have to go do this thing.
That was Tim Brown of Allbirds, the world's most comfortable shoe. And I should know because I've got 3 pairs and Tim literally only gave me one of them for free. Anyway, they were the world's fastest ever direct-to-consumer brand to reach a $1 billion valuation. But Tim's own story is awesome and starts with him leading his country, New Zealand, to the World Cup. So one way or another, he's always been good with his feet. You will love this one. So tune in or you'll miss out. We hope you enjoyed this episode. It was brought to you by your host, that's me, Dan Murray-Serter, producer Rich Martell, edited by Harry Morton of Lower Street Media, and if you've heard this, it'll probably have something to do with Jennifer Osman in Canada. You'll also notice throughout this series we've got some beautiful illustrations made for every episode, and that's all thanks to Christina Naru of smartupvisuals.com. You can check out show notes, transcripts, and our upcoming Secret Leaders live events on secretleaders.com. If you haven't yet, hit subscribe on whatever media player you use. Just follow us at Secret Leaders on Instagram or at Secret Leaders 1 on Twitter. And tell just one friend about how frickin' awesome this episode is. If you want to go the extra mile, I'm at Dan Murray Serter on Instagram, Twitter, and LinkedIn. And we'd love to see you take some screenshots of the episode you're listening to and share it across your social media. It'll bring a tear to our eye and joy to our hearts. See you next week. Tune in or you'll miss out.